today we're talking about how a vegan diet combats climate change.
Meet Quick Dick McDick, who's rapidly gaining a public following as he addresses farming and environmental issues.
That switching to a vegan diet will help combat climate change.
Quick Dick has a fantastic idea. While all of you, climate change is a global crisis and stop the pipeline protesters, spread your vegan margarine onto your gluten-free bagels, let's have a close look at how that margarine is made.
In particular, he has placed himself in the intersection of fossil fuels and food production. It is a hot-button issue, so he has concealed his identity. Quick Dick McDick is a pseudonym he uses to protect his and his family's identity because the messages that he gets back from his postings are not always well received or kind. We caught up with him on his farm in Saskatchewan on a day when he was planting seed for a conversation that matters about why it is important to hear from farmers about the process of growing the food we all need.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the following and viewers like you. Please become a patron at conversationsthatmatter.tv.
QDT, thanks for joining me on Conversations That Matter.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've become an internet sensation in Alberta and Western Canada. When you started out to produce your QDM, which stands for what?
That's Quick Dick McDick.
What prompted you to do this?
It started off real simple and innocent, just as kind of a way to keep in touch with close friends and family. And it kind of spiraled from there. I just found myself looking at everyday things that we do in life and thinking to myself, you know what, that's kind of goofy what we're doing here. Actually, it's really goofy. It's actually hilarious. And I kind of started building on that a little bit. And I guess when people find relatable material within social media, it grows quickly just because you see two or three people technically that message back and forth with each other, be it on any social media platform, are generally looking for the same content. So you get stuff spreading fast nowadays, right?
Some of the things that have really seemed to have struck a chord with you and a lot of the people who are watching your videos is the relationship between the energy sector and the ability to farm.
Mm.
You point out the direct link. Why do you think it's so important to understand why the energy sector is vitally important to our food supply?
I think it's important because everybody on the planet has got to eat. And there's a lot of people out there right now that are against the energy sector. I don't think they fully understand what it takes to actually farm a crop and get it off the field and get it into the stores and on their plates. There's so many different complex steps that you actually haven't even seen a guy named Quick Dick cover because there's so many of them. To take the time to do it, you would need a lot of time, which I don't have. But I'm in a really unique position because I understand both sides of it very well. I spent 19 years in oil and gas in northern Alberta, and I grew up here, and I'm back here now. I know this side of the industry very well too. So when you can understand both sides of it, I've been involved with logistics quite heavily as well. You start putting all the pieces of the puzzle together. It's taken me, you know, I've been out of school for, you know, close to 20 years here now. It's taken me about that amount of time to get it all put together, exactly how many different little pieces to the puzzle there are. I can't imagine that a lot of people, even the people on the oil and gas side that say, we need oil and gas. I like that you say that, but do you understand why? People that say we don't need oil and gas that are eating food that was brought to them by oil and gas off their plates, they say we don't need oil and gas and it's killing the world. Well, no, we can make some better decisions and some better choices, but do you really understand that this out here, it can't happen without it right now in the world.
Could you run that machine that is behind you on anything other than diesel fuel?
I think we have a little ways to go with nuclear technology to get there, but I mean, base load is what it comes down to. A lot of people want to say, well, get an electric tractor. Well, I don't see a plug out here close by anywhere, you know, and when we talk about life cycles on batteries and things like that, technology's got a long ways to come along with cost. To be able to run a piece of machinery like that for, you know, 18 hours a day while we actually have weather where we can get the crops into the ground. This is very, very time sensitive operations out here. And when you have the time to do it and the weather to do it, you need to be doing it. You can't be stopped playing a video game waiting for your tractor to charge at the side of the field. It doesn't work like that, right?
So that's one component of it, and that's just running the tractor. Where else does the energy sector in the scope of your work come into play?
Yeah, absolutely. It's everywhere. Right from fertilizers, creating fertilizers, getting them to us, drying grain. We depend largely on oil and gas products. The gas products is a big part of it too, especially out here in rural Saskatchewan. Take last year, for example, where everybody had to dry a better part of the crops that they did manage to get off the field. We're talking about guys that had $2,000 to $3,000 extra in carbon tax bills alone on natural gas to dry the grain. It's every little last piece of what goes on out here, right from how all this product gets out to us, how we get it off the field, and how we get it back to the people that eat it, it all hinges on oil and gas.
So what do you think has happened that people who make decisions about the imposition of the carbon tax don't seem to understand the link between that and the ability that you have as a farmer to bring the crop in, get it to market, and survive and still provide food that is affordable for the consumer? Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. I think what we really see going on, like carbon tax specific, is out of touch with reality on what it takes. When you have a person that's making these decisions, or a group of people that are making these decisions that don't have the least bit of experience in actually doing the project or making it happen, it's really easy for them to get out of touch with what's happening. Like I just said it a few minutes ago here, it took me 20 years to put all the pieces together. That being said, I wouldn't be able to go in and start making a decision on foreign trade policy with a bunch of different things with different countries because I have no experience in it. I think it's really important when you're making decisions like on the carbon tax to really have a look at it and see how you're affecting what's getting to people's plates. And carbon tax wise, I think it's a really dishonest thing for a government to do to an industry like this, because it gets promoted to the Canadian population that it's a climate action incentive program, which it's not. If you've watched a guy named Quick Dick McDick's carbon tax video, hopefully he got the point across that you're paying it. It's just you're not paying it directly out of your wallet on paper, right?
Well, there has been a dedicated effort by governments in Canada and the United States in particular to move people out of agriculture and into urban environments so that they can become producers of manufactured goods. Now, the only way that they were able to do that is if they started to mechanize farming. So not to understand the relationship between what we've done and how we created this industry and say, well, turn back time and go back to a place where farming was different seems completely impractical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely it does. You see a lot of farms, like take this area for example, in the area that we're actually in here right now, if you rewind say 20 to 25 years, there was a lot more people living out here and a lot more farms. There's a lot of smaller operations that had smaller amounts of commodities that they'd get to market. The only thing that's changed from now back to then is those people are 50% gone. The equipment's bigger, the amount that farmers that are in business have to farm is bigger, and the only thing that hasn't changed is the price of the commodity. So when you have a close look at that and what we're trying to do by getting people to, you know, congregate towards a more urban center, I kind of get it, but you can't just take away the fact that there's a certain amount of food that the world needs to eat. There's a certain amount of farmers that need to be able to cover a certain amount of acres to get that certain amount of food to those certain amount of people. No matter how many people are out here versus in urban centers, those numbers aren't going to change, and it still needs to happen. But when you have a steady line on your commodity price, it makes it challenging. You need to cover more acres to try and make more profits, to try and pay for what you have. To cover more acres, you need to buy more equipment. To buy more equipment, you need more money. If you need more money, you're not getting it from your commodity, so you want to try to cover more acres. It turns into a big circle, right? When everyone says, well, here it's turning into a big commercial farmer, is what a lot of people say. It doesn't change the fact that the globe needs to eat, and we need X amount of crops to come out of the field.
The commodity prices have not changed in the last quarter century?
Yeah, so you'd be looking back to 1977, I believe it is. Don't quote me on this, but I believe it's around 1977. I believe we're running almost the exact same price for Red Spring wheat right now. That tractor right there is not worth what a tractor was in 1977.
What does it cost for that tractor?
You're looking, you know, at a quarter of a million.
for the tractor alone.
That's right.
And the rest of the gear that you got behind there, what is that?
That's an air drill, actually. Yeah. So you'd be looking for the whole rig. You got to remember this is a depreciated rig here a little bit. I mean, you're looking at, say, somewhere in the ballpark of about $300,000 to $350,000 behind me. If you want to get into some of the newer stuff that guys are using to cover massive amounts of acres right now, it's quite significantly higher.
So this machine allows you to do the work of how many people?
You'd be doing the work right now. I mean, with the amount of acres that a person covers, I mean, you would need, if we're talking a, you know, an old 25-foot drill that a person used to have, I mean, you'd look at guys that would farm a section of land, right, where you can do four times that with what we have here right now.
What are we looking at behind you?
This is a quarter section. So this is 165 acres.
165 acres.
Yeah.
And what are you planting right now?
We're putting barley in here, feed barley.
And you'll get one crop this summer out of it?
Correct, one crop. If we get enough rain, and we don't get hailed out, and we don't get an early frost, and we don't get snowed on.
Or too much wind.
Well, no, you always get wind out here.
But do you have to worry about lodging?
Sometimes, yeah, it depends. The fertilizer game's really key in a lot of that. And then if you start getting some bad winds and some alternate weather, it can cause you some stress. I'm glad the environmental activists changed everything over to climate change instead of global warming, because it's really not global warming around here at all. We're dealing with a really late spring. We had an early winter, and it's been colder than normal here. So we're really not seeing the global warming thing happening here right now.
So what would you hope would be your yield out of this section?
You know, it varies from crop to crop. If we're looking at barley, I mean, if we were going somewhere between, you know, 40 to 50 bushels an acre would be great. It varies from year to year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a tough life, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is. But I mean, it's a job and it's work, and that's anybody can say that their life's tough and their job's tough. But see, you got to try and enjoy what you do, and you got to remember that you know, society and our economy depends on everybody doing their job, and that's where you see a lot of people nowadays that are maybe a little reluctant to come off of, specifically right now, CERB, to go back to you know, maybe a lower grade job than what they had before. It doesn't change the fact that we need jobs done here. Jobs need to be done so people can eat, so people can get supplies, and so people can stay alive. So hopefully a few people can see that piece of the puzzle and get back to work where people need them.
Well, that is one of the things that you are trying to do. You're trying to cast light onto what it takes to run a farm.
Absolutely.
And its reliance on the energy sector also requires that people understand what you're doing. Did you reach a point where you felt that it was just too much of a disconnect between what people in cities think about what should happen versus the reality of this, well, you know, rural farming environment?
It's a fantastic question. You might there's a lot of people, I guess, out there that would ask, what's the point of Quick Dick McDick? What's your goal? And to start off, I really didn't have one, to be perfectly honest, just because the guy was just kind of having some fun. As you grow a little bit of a following and you start seeing what people are looking for and what they don't know, that's ultimately the goal, is to maybe be able to try and draw a parallel or connect the dots for people of what it takes. Some of the oil and gas stuff that I've done, a lot of the agriculture stuff that I've done, there's a lot more coming out. And you know, it's in an entertaining, hopefully entertaining and funny kind of way, so people can be receptive of it. I mean, sometimes it's not, and sometimes people are going to get offended. But that's not everybody's going to share the same sense of humor, and not everyone's got the same idealisms, and that's what makes us unique about being humans, right? But hopefully, somewhere out there, we can get it so that at least a handful of people will say, "Wow, I didn't know that's what it took. Maybe I need to change my way of thinking a little bit." If we can slowly change a few people to think that way, that'd be fantastic.
You probably unknowingly started to parachute yourself into the midst of the discussion that's happening more in Alberta than it is in Saskatchewan, but I hear echoes of it out here. We feel left out, and people don't understand what we're about. Are you trying to help set the record straight? And do you think that we feel left out feeling is accurate?
Yeah, it's definitely an accurate feeling, and I understand it. Anyone that's lived through what happens out here, and I mean maybe what we as Western Canadians see coming from an Eastern run country, frustration, anger. It's a lot of things that run rampant, which hopefully a little bit of comedy in some of this stuff can get people laughing a little more to get them out of that rut. And sometimes I think people hearing a person say what's on their mind makes them feel a little more comfortable for feeling it. And maybe they can turn that rage into being like, hey, okay, maybe there's a few more people out there like that. But what I'd also like to say to Western Canadians is I've had the opportunity to be across this country many times, and we're not alone in Western Canada. There are a lot of incredible Canadians all across this country. Ontario, Quebec, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, PEI. I've met some really amazing people, and we all share the same ideology. It's just the fact that there's some different numbers that outpopulate us a little bit. But if we can all keep slowly working towards doing better and keeping that dialect open so that people can actually communicate with each other and how things work and how things happen, I think that's kind of the point of Quick Dick McDick. Western Canada is the backbone of Canada, but none of it all works without each other, and we just really need to be able to start working together a little more than working against each other. Hopefully we can start doing that.
You are aware of the fact that Alberta Premier Jason Kenney did share one of your videos about the what it takes to support the vegan diet.
You can get vegans mad at you real fast. That really wasn't targeted at hurting vegans, but it was more towards protesters who, you know, go out and protest things that they've used the products that what they're protesting created to get them there. It's more on the hypocrisy of protesters, but at the same time, along the same lines of here's what it takes to get it to your plate kind of thing. And there'll be a lot more of that to come. You know, with beef, we're on a mixed beef and grain operation here. So hopefully we can just keep bringing that to people's morning coffee, one episode of Quick Tick at a time. And, you know, it's not all political and it's not all swearing. I mean, we try and do some kids stuff every now and then and just some funny rural Saskatchewan, Canada stuff. But yeah, it was great that Mr. Kenny shared that, and it just means that the message is getting spread, and that's what we want.
So you've remained pretty consistent. How many videos are you putting out on a monthly basis?
So I get four a month. I try and go every Monday, which I thought was tough during calving season. A little tougher now. And I'm just going to try and keep going at it. Hopefully people can be patient with me if I miss a day or two here. And we're just going to try and keep going best we can and keeping people laughing.
Why is it important that you keep going? You've already delivered your message quite well. Why do you think it's important you keep up the momentum?
I spent a little bit of time in my previous career somewhat unhappy getting up in the day. And that's not what we should do through life. We need to make sure that we're happy, and when we get up, we enjoy our lives, because we're not here for a very long period of time, and jobs need to be done, but try and make sure that you're happy doing the job that you're doing. Contribute to society, but be able to be happy at the same time. I went through a stage in my life recently where I wasn't the happiest, and I found it again, and I want to be able to deliver that. I've had a lot of people say, hey, I was having a bad day and I watched your video and I started having a good day right after I watched it because I laughed. And that's very important.
I find it very funny that you use the pseudonym, and I read it's because you want to, well, kind of protect your mother. And in your video about who is Quick Dick McDick, you even have your mother in there going, I never admitted that he's my son.
That's a little bit of a joke we play, because Quick Dick is kind of not a guy that a mother would ever be proud of, which is really not the case at all. My mother is a fantastic person. My dad is too. He's into a lot of the videos, and she couldn't be prouder. It's just kind of a joke that we play off of, and I think people get it, and whoever doesn't is still funny to them, you know.
So I just want to wrap up on one point about Canada's food supply and how important it is that we have people like you carrying out the work that you do. Without farming the way you do it, would we be able to feed the people of Canada?
Yeah, so that's I think that's a really important thing, and there's it was actually in the federal carbon tax overnight oats video is you know, just when you look at Regina and Saskatoon, two of the closest cities that we have here, they're very small cities on a global perspective, and they can't function without farms doing what we do, right? Beef producers, pork producers, poultry, anything else that we have here in Canada, dairy producers. There's so many different pieces of the puzzle. Take that out of the equation and step outside of Saskatchewan, step outside of Canada, and we have a lot of other countries around the world. Bangladesh, Saskatchewan's one of the biggest contributors to Bangladesh's food supply in the world. And it's a global effort, and that's why I get really frustrated when I hear a lot of people talking about, you know, global problems, global warming, global greenhouse gas emissions. It's global food. And it's global oil and gas as well. Everything's global. We all need each other to work in the globe. We can just shut everything off and say, hey, we're not going to do it anymore. We can take 3/4 of the land away. If you want to take even more of it away and we're just actually going to live on our farms here, we'll be just fine. But a lot of cities would go very, very, very hungry. So, you know, if anyone out there is listening that works in agriculture, you're doing a fantastic job and keep doing it. And the hardest part about being in agriculture and hearing a lot of people beat on you for what you do is they maybe don't understand just how integral you are to their survival. So try and be the bigger person and try and let them see the light in a nice way, because people will respond to you being nice a lot better than they'll respond to you being mean.
So just before wrapping up, where can people find your video?
Yeah, you can find me, search Quick Dick McDick on YouTube. I've got a channel there. Some of it's, you know, maybe R-rated a little bit. Some of it's PG. Some of it's for kids. Watch it all before the kids watch it, just to make sure. And you can get me quickdickmcdick.ca. I got a website there if you want some of these fancy hats or a shirt and some stuff like that. Yeah, that's where we're at.
Well, thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
Is Quick Dick being a little ridiculous? Yes. Is Quick Dick against vegan diets? No. Does Quick Dick believe we should work towards a greener planet? Yes. All Quick Dick is saying is that if you're going to tell him that he has stolen your childhood, we don't do enough, and we are killing the planet, I have one request for you next time you go to a protest. Walk, crawl, swim, or row, eat twigs, wear clothes made out of leaves, make your signs out of cattails, because the rest of it uses oil and gas to be produced worldwide, and you're killing the planet. But that's just how Quick Dick sees it. This is Quick Dick McDick with a Quick Dick McDick toonie.